Parshas Miketz, you see that there are two different expressions used by Paro by his dream. The first pasuk it says that he was standing al hayor, literally would mean above the river. But later on, it uses the expression al fasayor in pasuk yud zayin. Rashi does say in different places in Chumash that al can mean eitz al bay, but we would have to ask, if that is so, why here? In one pasuk it says explicitly by al sfas, and in the first one it says literally al. So the Rosh Hashiva Shlita explains that Paro understood, being king, the Or, which is the mainstay of the economy of Egypt, everything dependent on the Or, the king's rulership, not to get the natives restless, to revolt. One understands there has to be a good economy. So he knew that he and Mitzrayim were dependent on the Or. And that's another meaning of Al. Al can mean hanging, dependent on that object. And that's along the same lines as when Paro says in Pasuk Ches that the Pasuk says that he told the wise men Eschamalomo, and there was no interpreter of Osam, them. So it's again a change in expression. One is singular, Chalomo, and Osam is plural. And the Rosh Hashiva Shlita explains along similar lines that what the meaning here is that Paro also understood that these two dreams, one with the cows, one with the ears of grain, they were really all one, having to do with, again, the Or, which is symbolizing the economy of Egypt. And therefore, when the interpreters were telling him different things, plural or some, as Rashi brings from the Medrash, the cows would have seven daughters and bury seven daughters. Rashi doesn't bring the other part of the Medrash, with the ears of corn, he would conquer seven countries, lose seven countries. Paro understood that this couldn't be the interpretation. You can also ask, why wouldn't the wise men have thought of an interpretation? Don't forget, they're wise men. Chachamim. Just like Yosef did. So one thing we can say is that we can understand, being a Monday morning quarterback, after we hear an explanation, it's very easy to say, oh sure, that's very simple, I could have thought of it. Let's see one think of it before. We can also say, as we know, if Hashem does not want someone to do something, to say something, he will make that person not be able to, for whatever reasons he has. As the pasuk says, Meshiv Hachamim Achor V'daitam Yisakel. Another interpretation, answer to this question, was given by the Patek Rav Zatzal, and he said, we all know that the Or was an Avodah Zarah. It was their deity. They worshipped it. Can you imagine if these wise men would come and give an interpretation which would throw bad light onto the deity, make it look bad, that it would fail them, for instance, in the years of famine, off with their heads, they'd be killed, going against the deity. And of course, you understand Yosef didn't have any fears of such things. He knew Hashem was the one and only. And this is what he wants. So there was no problem. And of course Hashem, as always, protects him. We also find an interesting midrash that actually Rashi brings down in Cheskel and Avi, talking about the nevuah that was given later on in history of the 40 years of famine, that Mitzrayim would be desolate. And it says that actually this was in the dream of Paro here. You have 6 times 7, meaning like the 7 cows, the 7 years of grain. 2 times when Paro actually dreams the dream. 7 years of corn, as I said. 7 cows. The second time when Paro repeats the dream to Yosef. Another 2 times. And the last 2 times when Yosef gives the interpretation. 7 times 6 is 42. And as we know, even though there were supposed to be 7 years of famine, it ended after 2 because of the schus of Yaakov Avinu. So you had still 40 years left, which was fulfilled later on in history. And as we see that after Yosef interpreted the dreams, Paro makes him the viceroy, the second in command of all of Egypt. And he calls his name Safanas Paneach, the revealer of hidden things. One can ask, why did he need a new name? Why was it so important? And a good cover of mine, Reb J. Greenfield, gives a very cute explanation to that. And he explains, can you imagine what would have happened when the brothers come down to Egypt and they're introduced to the viceroy of Egypt and his name is Yosef? Something very interesting going around. Therefore, that was at least one reason why this name was given by Paro to Yosef. And we can also mention what my chaver said about when the brothers came down and the fact that it says that they didn't recognize him, but he recognized them. And as Rashi brings down, because he didn't have a beard when they left, and now he did. We can ask that we know the Chazal that Rashi brings down in the parsha before, that it says that they looked alike, Yosef and his father Yaakov Avinu. So we can ask, why wouldn't the brothers have recognized him just because of that? The fact Yaakov Avinu, their father, of course, had a beard. Why wouldn't that have been enough? And he answers, because as we know, there's a difference. When you see a person with a beard, when he's over 90, that they saw their father, and a person of over 30, in his 30s, there's a big difference. Especially we can add Yaakov Avinu, who aged and looked so old from his tzaris, even more so the difference of when he was older. And I know myself, seeing pictures of a person before when he was younger, even though he was bearded, and much later on, one comes to mind is the Stipel Goyim Zatzal. Wouldn't recognize at all that it was the same person. And, of course, he gives him Masnas Paspotifera, which the Masechta Sofrim brings down, was the child that was born by Dina from Shechem. And the Malach Michael, and she was 6 years old, brought her to Egypt, and she was brought up by his Potiphera and his wife, which we see, therefore, that he married his niece. As Avraham Avinu did, which the Gemara says it's a big mitzvah. And Torah describes how they had two children. And Yosef calls the first one Menashe, because he says, Kinashani Elokim es kolam olib es kol beis aviv, because Hashem made me forget the toil that I've had, tzaros, being in prison, for instance, and all the house of my father, the longing he has for his father, and how his father must be in mourning for him. So we can ask a big question. Yosef, as we saw from the other parsha before, was taken to task for such forgetfulness. When he was a ruler in his master's household, and he started to preen himself, getting too comfy, Hashem punishes him. L'fi madreges hatzadik. So what's going on here? That he gives praise, thanks to Hashem, that he forgot? But the Rosh Hashiva Shlita in Kol Dodi explains beautifully. There are two types of forgetting. When one forgets because they're interested in pressing the pleasure buttons to give in to Yetzer Haras, to give in to the Taiva's desires that attract people in the world. That type of forgetting, not good. When they lose focus of their goal and what they should be doing in life. But when one forgets because they are so involved in doing the will of Hashem, agonizing, toiling in Torah, in mitzvahs, when to do the next chesed, have to get on time, to the Beis Medrash, to the next mitzvah. Toiling in that way to make sure that you finish the Daf Yomi, whatever quotas one has, Tanakh, Shas, Shulchan Aruch, your daily quota, things like that. When there's a forgetfulness, that is very commendable, because that will bring the Geula Shleima, that will bring all the beautiful things that Hashem wants us to have. So when you forget momentarily because you're osek, involved in the mitzvahs, in the learning Torah, so you don't think about the churban at that specific time, because you're doing the greatest things in order to end the galus. That kind of forgetting is what Hashem Himself wants. And as the pasuk says, Ki nashani Elokim, it's Hashem Himself who's doing it. After Ravi tells us about the famine starting and the Chol HaRotzos of Chol Eretz Mitzrayim, is actually machlokes between the Gemara and the Medrash exactly which lands were involved. Gemara says all the inhabited lands at that time in the world. The Medrash says besides Mitzrayim, the three surrounding lands basically, Eretz Yisrael, Arabia, Phoenicia, Phoenicia. And it mentions that the people come of Mitzrayim to complain because they say Yosef is making condition now that if they want the grain, they have to be circumcised. And Paro tells them, well, you knew about this, that this was coming. Why didn't you collect yourselves? They said they did. So, what happened? Yosef, well, they said it will rot it. And of course, Paro told them, oh, then if Yosef has that kind of ability to make your grains rot, you just better go and listen to him and do whatever he says, because he can also put on us a decree that we should die also. One has to understand what was Yosef's intention by telling them this condition. So the Mefarshim explained basically that Yosef knew and understood that his brothers, his father, would be coming down to Mitzrayim. As we know, especially nowadays, with the immigrants and the hard feelings, bad feelings, to say the least, people have about them, a stranger in the land, becoming outcasts. And therefore, Yosef wanted the Mitzrayim not to treat the Bnei Yisrael that way. And one way would be becoming like them in this way, this physical change in their bodies, which is, of course, as all Bnei Yisrael do, and that would prevent Be'ezus Hashem any problems of considering the Bnei Yisrael and giving them trouble because they're different strangers in the land. Then the Torah describes how when the brothers come down and Yosef accuses them of being spies, we would have to understand, as we always know, that Hashem deals mida k'neged mida, measure for measure, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin says. And therefore, how will we understand what the measure for measure would be with such an accusation against the brothers? And Rosh Hashiva Shalita explains in Kol Dodi that actually Rashi, in Parshas Kedoshim, explains that in a way Ragel and Rochil are one and the same Lashon. And just like a gossip monger, one who goes around tail bearing, what does he do? He does the same thing as a spy. A spy comes to the land, whatever he's spying out, and tries his best to find the flaw that would enable them to conquer the land. And therefore, you can understand that's the same thing that a person who speaks Lashon Hara, Rechilus, does also. That no matter how good a person might be, they look for the flaws and build on that. Or even Chas V'Shalom, if they're none, they'll make up ones. Motzi Shema. And therefore cause the problems and the discontent, disunity, machloikis. And that's, according to the Amadrega, actually what the brothers did. They should have understood that Yosef was basically a good boy, and they should have tried to understand as best as possible the situation, to answer whatever he did. Same goes for Yosef also with the brothers, mutually. But no. And it got exaggerated, out of proportion, and we have this problem. So therefore, that's the Mida K'neged Mida also. Their actions, like a Meragel, they are accused of being Meragel. And after Chamishi, the brothers, of course, understand this. They know it's all from Hashem. And they start the tshuva, feeling guilty about what they did now. And one of the things that Reuven says is, "V'gam damo hinei nidrosh," and also his blood is being sought now. So first of all, Rashi brings some Chazal, the gam, what is the gam adding? That the blood of Yosef and the blood of the father, Yaakov Avinu. Because the tzaris and the pain being caused, and that was caused him That is also being Nidrosh. And as we know from the Zohar, that Reuven actually did not know about the sale, as far as he thought, the same as Yaakov Avinu, that he was killed. And we have an interesting gematria given by the Rosh Hashiva. As far as we just said, Reuven knew. And if he would have been killed and died at the age of 17, which he was then, that would have meant that 93 years of his life, which as we know, he lived till 110, would have been missing. And that is the gematria of Gam Damo. That would have been the number of years that was taken from him. At the end of the parsha, when the brothers are accused of stealing Yosef's cup, we find an interesting thing that the brothers say that the one who is found to have the cup, not only he should be punished, but they also will be avadim. So we can ask, why would the ones who are not involved in the theft even make such a statement, which the one who ran after them agreed to? In any court of law, they would be found innocent. They're not the ones who stole it. No one's accusing all of them. So, Rosh Hashiva, Tzatzal, and Dorash Moshe explains that in actuality, especially according to the Torah, this is a very true statement. In fact, we have a similar thing in Parshas Kedoshim when it talks about one who is about Obed Avodah Zarah, who is his child, Molech, that the family would be also punished. And Rashi explains from Chazal, because in general you don't find a family that has a criminal that they are not in a way considered all criminals. Why? Because they hide him, answer for him, protect him. Here also we can say that if the group who the thief is among made certain that they were so against theft, stealing, the criminal amongst them would not have the chutzpah to try to steal while he was amongst them. He would have such a fear of the reaction of those amongst them, he would never think of doing it at that time. When he's not with them, it's a different story. But when he's with them, he would not do it. So there's a chasaram, a lack of that projection from the group. If that's not felt by every single one amongst them, that they don't project that righteousness, that anyone who is amongst them would feel it and not do any wrong when being with them. Yet Hashem, it should be with all of us that we should not even need anyone else to do the right thing. That our own Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem should be enough to always do what Hashem wants of us. Tamid mi'atav yadolam.